Well, hello and welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, it has been reported that there are now Zika cases here in South Florida that were not travel related. Just a little while ago, Governor Rick Scott said that the state has confirmed there are four cases of Zika infection in Miami-Dade and Broward counties that were acquired locally. And they have an exact location where these were identified. It's within the Miami ones, within the area between Northeast 20th Street and Northeast 38th Street, covering much of the Wynwood community. Now, mosquitoes in South Florida are spreading the virus. Well, what does that mean? Well, we're joined by Health News Florida reporter Abe Abaraya. Abe, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, you know what? How did they come to this confirmation? Just briefly describe this process.
So when you're dealing with an epidemiological investigation like this, they know that the main vector for Zika virus is the mosquitoes. So obviously that they start with, well, were you in a place where there's already local Zika transmissions? So was this a travel-related case? When that is sort of eliminated, then they start going into, well, is it possible that you caught it through sexual transmission with someone who was traveling outside the area? And essentially, at this point, they're also testing the mosquitoes as well to see if they're able to find Zika virus in the local mosquito population, which they haven't at this point. But at this point, they have sort of ruled out everything. And so sort of the last remaining thing is, well, this must have come from local mosquitoes, you know, in the South Florida area.
Now, this was predicted. It was predicted this would happen. I'm just wondering if things are moving along as fast as health officials thought it would be.
It's hard to say. I mean, when you talk to, everyone who, from the Florida Surgeon General to the U.S. Surgeon General, they say essentially this is a matter of, in Florida, it was a matter of not when, but, not if, but when. So I think that, this is moving along sort of predictably, especially when you look at, some of the other diseases that were carried by the same mosquito, the Aedes aegypti. This is sort of moving along in the same pattern for that. So I think it's moving about the speed that we would think. It's just, it's not surprising at all.
How does this change the way state health officials now attack the problem?
Well, when you've got a lot more boots on the ground in a way, you've got a lot more mosquito control going door to door, Miami-Dade and Orange County as well up in here in Central Florida, they treat a potential Zika case before it's confirmed as if it is a Zika case. So, you've already had people going door to door and, in the areas where this was happening and saying, can we come, inspect your property? Can we inspect your business? Can we look for those, those used tires? Can we look for those planters that maybe are gathering water that might be, a place for mosquitoes to breed, especially now as we are in the fully, the full mosquito season, as it were, and those incubation periods, they get shorter during the hot summer months here. So you have a lot more boots on the ground. You've got a lot more people going door to door. You have a lot more people collecting samples from people who, you kind of play the sort of like telephone. You find this person, maybe has it, has Zika virus. Then you start going, well, who have you had interaction with? Let's test them. And you sort of move out further and further and that, get that concentric circle out further until you, feel like you're comfortable that you've met everyone that maybe could be involved in this.
And just real quickly, wondering too, does this change the way they attack the mosquito problem? Is it now trying to get out there and do more spraying, perhaps?
Well, you will see more spraying. The governor at the press conference I was at today said that they're going to start contracting with private pest control companies to increase the amount of spraying. That being said, mosquito control for, the Aedes aegypti, the best method is to get rid of the breeding grounds for the mosquitoes. The spraying is effective, and we're not saying it's not. But it's more effective to get rid of the breeding ground. But when you have something like this, it's sort of a public health, emergency, if you want to call it that, or health crisis. This is something that's top of mind for people. And, one of the things that they're going to be doing is they're going to increase that spraying because that's a visible thing that you can show people. And that is, you can say, listen, we are going after these mosquitoes, even though the spraying is not the most effective way to get rid of them.
All right. I was also just curious at what state officials are saying about the fact that the Rio Games are starting next week. And it is winter down there, so not as many mosquitoes as usual, but still a lot of athletes and tourists going to Rio. Any extra concern because of that?
It wasn't addressed specifically, but I can tell you, you know, having talked to epidemiologists, that that is something that is sort of top of mind, because it is going to increase the number of people who are traveling from an area that has got the local Zika infection to other areas, you know, and sort of possibly bringing the mosquito or bringing the virus back, and then it can end up in the mosquitoes, you know, and continue the cycle on this.
All right. Abe Abaraya with Health News Florida out of WMFE in Orlando. Thank you so much, Abe.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Again, so confirming that there are four Zika cases here in South Florida, Broward and Miami-Dade, where, again, it was contracted in Florida. These are not travel-related. Changes the game. We'll keep you up informed on that story as we go. So changing things up. You know, the Environmental Regulation Commission, this is a commission appointed by the governor, recently voted for new standards for more than 80 different toxic chemicals, some of them carcinogens, and just how much of each we're going to allow into our water supply. Now, obviously, environmental groups are steaming, many others as well. They claim we're putting Floridians' health in danger because of this. Now, the commission, again, as I mentioned, appointed by Governor Scott, claims that these changes are needed and are not going to be harmful to state residents. There have been questions about some of those chemicals on the list and their link to fracking as well, the fracking industry. All right, lots going on here. Let me bring in my guest. Joining me from Tallahassee, the Miami Herald Tallahassee Bureau, Mary Ellen Klass. Mary Ellen, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Rachel Silverstein, she's the Executive Director and Waterkeeper with Miami Waterkeeper, joining us in studio. Rachel, thanks for being back.
It's a pleasure.
All right, Mary Ellen, let me start with you. These are just proposed changes, but really, where are we in the process right now?
Well, the Environmental Regulation Commission, which as you mentioned, is a governor-appointed group of it's seven-member panel, and there are only five current positions that are filled. They voted 3-2 this week that the rules proposed by the Department of Environmental Protection should be adopted. And these now set new water quality standards for around the state. And rules themselves will now be going to the U.S. Department of Environmental Protection and get approval there. And there is an effort by the environmental groups to try and stop it at that level, since they did not succeed in getting the ERC to reject these proposals.
I do want to mention that we did invite the DEP on the program. They didn't get back to us on this. I want to throw out the question, you know, do you have any questions about these new regulations and what it could mean for our water? Share your thoughts or ask your question now, 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us at WLRN. Rachel Silverstein, help paint a picture for us here. What exactly are these regulations saying? What we can just start dumping some more toxins into our water? Really, what kind of risk are we looking at?
Yeah, I think, you know, just to clarify a little bit more about the process as well, the two seats that were vacant on the Environmental Regulation Commission are key seats to protect the public and to protect Floridians.
There are seven seats altogether, but two are empty.
Correct. The environment seat has been absent and vacant for over a year now, and the local government seat has also been vacant for several months. Now, DEP held three public hearings in May about this proposed rule change. None of them were held south of Stewart, so South Floridians couldn't easily participate in these meetings. A group of over 50 environmental groups led by Senator Bob Graham sent a letter to the governor asking that he fill these seats before the vote. Instead of responding or filling the seats, instead, the meeting was fast-tracked from early fall to July 26th, this last Tuesday, the same day as a huge meeting that was taking place about the algae blooms going on in the center of the state.
Mary Ellen, why was this pushed forward?
Well, I haven't gotten a real straight answer from the department on this. They indicate that this is something that they've been working on for a very long time, and it is true that these rules have not been updated since 1992. They've actively been drafting and proposing these since about 2012. So they indicated that they were ready to go. It is not clear why they needed to move this meeting up from September to July. And they've kind of opened themselves up to criticism, I think, legitimate criticism because of it.
And what about the fact that there are two empty seats that have not been filled? What has the governor said about that?
They say that they're in the process of looking at applications and that the governor will be appointing them when he's ready. However, there has been a point made by the groups that, you know, would this 3-2 vote perhaps be something else if the environmentalists and local governments had a say? There were members of some local governments that did appear at the meeting on Tuesday, and they were critical of these proposals. Some local governments do have more stringent requirements for discharge when they permit these levels, but many parts of the state are dependent on DEP to safeguard water.
Rachel Silverstein, I'm not a scientist. Help me understand this. I'm looking at this list, and there's some things on here I can't even pronounce. But, you know, I know there are carcinogens. I know there are things here that are extremely poisonous. Cyanide is one of them. Help me understand what exactly is it we're putting in our water and what these new rules are going to allow.
Yeah, so this is a long list of industrial pollutants. These are some of the most serious chemicals out there. Dozens of them are known carcinogens, which means that they can cause cancer. You know, specifically some of the chemicals like benzene, which is increasing several fold in this new rule change, is commonly used in fracking, although most of the fracking chemicals, we actually don't know what's in a lot of the fracking fluid because they're protected as you know, business secrets. So it's hard to compare this list with fracking, but it certainly would, and many think that it would ease the way for fracking. The pulp and paper companies have been very supportive of this rule change, as well as other polluting industries. So some of these other chemicals like perchloroethylene have been implicated in the Camp Lejeune cancer cluster, and our U.S. service members actually came down with cancer, specifically many instances of male breast cancer as a result of exposure to this carcinogen in their water.
Do we know how much exposure we can have to all of these different chemicals before it becomes a risk? Or, you know, I'm trying to understand mm-hmm. how they've come to this decision and as to how many and how much of these chemicals mm-hmm. are they going to allow.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this process is supposed to be establishing. And state DEP is using a new model called a probabilistic model, which is a statistical model that's supposed to determine how much exposure you can have before you get to a certain level of cancer risk. And what EPA recommends is that at a certain exposure limit, one in, let's say, a million people might get cancer from this exposure level. With the DEP limits, the more Florida seafood you eat, because a lot of these carcinogens accumulate in seafood, the higher your risk. So if you are eating Florida seafood more than once a week, your risk increases to maybe one in 100,000. And if you're eating Florida seafood every day, like people who live off of the fish that they catch in our tribal communities, your risk is more like one in 10,000.
Well, okay. Again, on what you were saying there mm-hmm. about some of these chemicals and how that the process of how they're allowing it, Mary Ellen Class, I'm trying to understand. Is that how you understand it as well, what Rachel is saying?
Yes. The thing that is, this is an imprecise science in many ways. I mean, the more I'm learning about this, the more I realize that they take measurements, they allow these industrial toxins to be released in water. However, they want to make sure that it's at a safe level. The testing, however, is something that is not very specific, I think. And in some of the permits, they allow concentrations to happen at the discharge level, and then they don't measure it until actually it's been diluted somewhat in the water. So it's very flexible. I think the regulators have a lot of room, and I think that's what has increased the level of concern among the environmental community, is that Florida's existing structure allows for all kinds of variations.
Yes, Rachel.
And I think it's important to note, too, that this probabilistic method that DEP is using has not been used ever before by EPA for determining these kinds of standards or any other state in the nation. So Floridians are being sort of used as a testing ground for this new scientific approach. And the result of it is that we're allowing a lot more of these chemicals in our water in most instances. And so, you know, we have a huge problem with the fact that, you know, the public is potentially being put at risk here, and our voices weren't heard, and you know, we are now asking EPA to allow the public to weigh in. And we've actually had a petition up on our website just for a few days, and we've already had hundreds of people weigh in And people can, you know, visit the Miami Waterkeeper website for more information about the next steps and how we're going to be approaching EPA to ask for the public's voices to be heard in determining whether or not to accept this rule change.
Again, the number is 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. If you have any questions about these new proposed regulations on, again, the types of toxins that we are going to be allowing into the water supply, you can also tweet us at WLRN, post your question there, and we'll get to it. Mary Ellen Class, just to understand, too, so the Florida Department of Environmental Protection is, this is their study. This is they're going by this plan that they call Monte Carlo, which I've been told is not new, right? That this is right. Some kind of scientific method that they've used that isn't like what the EPA usually does?
Well, it is not clear that EPA has not used it. However, they have not approved it for the way for measuring a statewide standard. They did indicate that it is a method that is something that they're considering and looking into, and I think the jury is still out as to whether EPA will allow this process to be one that is used in the future. But I think one of the key things is, no matter what the method is, and is the question of how concentrated are these chemicals, and at what point do people get exposed to them, and fish that we eat get exposed to them. And, you know, when the department has allowed itself to have this range, and the range has in some cases made the levels lower that are allowed, but in other cases, and in cases like benzene, which is a carcinogen that scares a lot of people because it is used in oil drilling and to clean industrial solvents, that is a level that has been allowed to more than double. And so the question is, you know, no matter, the DEP says they want a consistent standard. EPA says we need to protect people. So how they thread the needle, that's the challenge.
I'm going to go to the phones now. Again, talking about these new proposed regulations by state officials on exactly what kind of toxins we're allowed to put in our water. And again, a lot of this is industrial. And what amounts? And, of course, we've been asking a question, well, at what point does that become dangerous for us? I want to go to the phones. I'm going to start with Danielle in Miami. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Good morning.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I was in one of the industries years back that disappeared. And what I recall in those years is that Florida came up with standards that were not aligned with the federal EPA. And they were really drastic. And how do they compare now? Are they back to what the EPA asked as the federal, or are they something higher?
All right. Well, let me turn to my guest. Can anybody answer that question?
I think, you know, as you mentioned at the start of this, these standards haven't been updated, you know, since the early 90s, and it was definitely time to update them. When they were written in the early 90s, they were using a national average for seafood consumption. And of course, Floridians, you know, we have, we eat a lot of seafood. We're in the water a lot. It's part of our culture and why we all live here in Florida and what makes our state so amazing. And so they did increase the estimated amount of seafood that Florida eats in this new model. But the people who voted no on the commission raised concerns that the information wasn't Florida-specific enough, and that the whole point of redoing these standards was to make it really Florida-specific, and that they simply didn't have enough data. Those same two individuals on the commission who voted no also noted that some of these numbers actually have been changing about what the allowable limits are, and that they didn't really get an explanation for why, after the proposed rule, suddenly the limits for benzene changed, for example. And, you know, that brought up a huge concern about, is this really a standardized method? Is this really fair? Why are these numbers changing? Are they really Florida-specific as well? So, you know, there's still a lot of outstanding questions about this method and this process.
All right, let me go back over to the phones. I want to go to Zach in Miami. Zach, welcome to the program.
Hello. So it's pretty undeniable that the Rick Scott administration, DEP, is not very environmentally friendly, more like the don't expect protection department. So if you fail to stop the rule change at the USDEP level, what is the possibility that a more environmentally friendly or environmentally responsible administration, the DEP, might come back and revisit this rule change and get a more stringent one?
All right, Zach, thank you for the question. Mary Ellen, let me start with you on that. So a possibility that another governor, another administration comes back and changes this?
Yes, there's always that possibility. I think this has taken so long as it is. It's probably very likely that that there will continue to be a long, drawn-out process before this is finalized. As we mentioned, it does go to the EPA. There is already a petition up by the environmental groups to ask EPA to hold public hearings and to take more testimony about the proposal that was approved here. And if the EPA rejects it, they're going to have to send it back. And that may happen within the time that this administration is still in office, or it may happen later.
All right. Before we finish up here, let me come back to this point, because Mary Ellen Kloss, you had mentioned this a moment ago. It was in your piece that some of this may be linked to the fracking industry. And there were questions that came up at that meeting about, are you just kind of opening things up for possibly allowing fracking in Florida?
So the department has indicated that there is no correlation at all, that this is the benzene levels have, the science around benzene has changed, and they are just updating the toxin levels and the standards to follow those changes. However, benzene is used in oil drilling, and it's believed to be a prominent ingredient in cleaning out the industrial pipes and so forth used in fracking. So there is great concern that this is all designed to help pave the way for some statewide fracking industry.
Okay.
There is no evidence that that is happening, but it's certainly their questions.
All right. And real quickly, Rachel Silverstein, I'm going to give you the last word here. Next step, though, this hasn't been approved. It goes to the EPA. So what's their process? How different is it from what the state just did?
So there's a lot of discretion on the part of the EPA as to whether or not they'll actually hear more public comments and open it back up again. And it's also sort of at their discretion as to how quickly this all happens, which means, they could draw this out, or it could happen very rapidly where this rule change is adopted. And we're still sort of in a fact-finding stage with that. But, as I mentioned, people can look at our website and follow on Facebook. We're going to be posting frequently about updates here in our conversations with EPA. And I know many of our local elected officials are extremely concerned about this, as many of our citizens are as well. And, a lot of the Florida hospitality, tourism, and seafood industry should look carefully at what this will do to their industries as well.
Rachel Silverstein is the Executive Director and Waterkeeper with Miami Waterkeeper. Rachel, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, Mary Ellen Kloss, stick around with me here, because we're going to turn things around. And coming up next, we're going to be talking lots of politics, because, if you didn't notice, there's a lot of politics in the news lately. That's all coming up next here on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN.